From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, June 24th. I'm John Myers from KQED, and another fun week in state budget politics, and another fun week indeed, so much fun that two more people rolling in. Actually, one is a repeat from last week. You know him, you love him.
Couldn't get enough.
Kevin Yamamura from the Sacramento Bee is sitting in this morning, and a newbie. You're a
Hello,
newbie.
Yes.
You're the newbie. Wyatt Buchanan, a political reporter at the Capitol for the San Francisco Chronicle, was good enough to be dragged in, even though I did not give him the free cup of coffee that I promised him. He bought his own. It's public radio.
Okay.
I mean, it's public radio. Come on. We have a low budget here.
Yeah. It's my contribution to KQED.
And we appreciate that. As another good Bay Area news organization, we'll take anything we can get. And Anthony York, parts unknown again. He's not
in Blythe anymore.
He's not in Blythe, I don't think. He's been banished to the hinterland. I asked Wyatt and Kevin to come in because we're still focused a lot on budget. You guys write a lot of budget news. And, what's my headline for the saga of this week?
I mean,
the controller action was the biggest one, but everybody hurling bricks at each other, it felt like by the week's end. I mean,
yeah, I think people are in disarray. To a certain extent.
Which is not exactly unheard of in Sacramento.
They're in disarray, but they're having to be focused because they're not getting paid $400 a day. So, I don't know. I think that will perhaps force them to focus.
Yeah, I mean, this is not an unusual place to be. You know, we all know that. And we, you know, Schwarzenegger called it the Kabuki. Others have called it other things. And people, you know, there's a common wisdom around the Capitol that the tenor gets grumpier right before something happens. But I every time that we say that, every year, I'm still not convinced that tenor, you know, that's actually where we're going. And I'm not convinced this time either because, I mean, you tell me from what you saw this week, Wyatt, with the Republic, and we'll get through the details here in a moment, but with the paycheck issue, the Republicans, the governor, it's still a three-headed Democrat, Republican kind of dispute.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yesterday, I think every single member of the Republican caucus in the Senate was outside the governor's office. He wasn't there.
Conveniently, the governor wasn't there.
Which is too bad because he would have came out. You know he would have come out.
He would have. It's always good to be in front of a guy's office saying bad things about him when you know he can't come out and say something. But yes.
Yeah. And, it was a bit. It seemed like, we've heard this record before when they were out there, that the governor's not willing to go as far as, you know, they want him to go to put something on the ballot. So, what that means, it seems like it means that a bipartisan deal remains elusive.
that press conference to me seemed like they were trying to just change the narrative. I mean, Democrats are saying they need the tax bridge. Without it, there's no deal. Republicans are saying you don't need the bridge. That's a new demand, and we'll give you the election. No bridge.
Right.
They're both trying to frame the issue, and I think Republicans felt like they needed to come out and frame it in the way they saw it. Best.
Well, let's walk backwards from the bridge back to one side of the shore for a moment and talk about the pay decision. So Controller Chung on Tuesday, I don't know what I would have put the odds at last week about whether or not he would have ruled that way, though now in hindsight, I should have said they were like 99%. I mean, you know.
We actually were back and forth the night before the budget. And I honestly didn't think there was a chance, but I mean, I said it was doubtful, but yeah. I did want to know what Chung was going to say.
Yeah.
Because we knew the contents of the budget and we knew that there were flaws, obviously.
And so he, you know, he laid out his, and I think this is, there's more to this part of the story, but we'll stay with the week's events first. You know, this notion that, that he has to read in tandem two parts of the Constitution that the voters amended at different times, very different campaigns, very different backers of the campaigns, but that's, again, part of the backstory there, that he has to read those two together and therefore that the budget that was vetoed had to have been balanced itself and it wasn't and therefore no pay. So, right, the roughly $400 a day for the rank and file legislator, somewhere almost to $50,000 a day cumulatively that the state saves. Another one of those actions, I think we talked about this last week, where inside the insular world of the capital, it, you know, doesn't play so hot. And people are like, ah, John Chung, he has no political future, da 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 da. And outside of the capital, wildly popular.
It.
I mean, John Chung for, you know.
Anything.
Yeah, John Chung for president.
I saw comments that said present.
Did it?
And I mean, I think.
You know, and he's got a trip to Iowa next week, so
yeah,
no.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, seriously, I mean, it plays huge outside the Capitol,
yeah.
In large part not because they love John Chung, because they hate the legislature so much.
Yeah.
I mean, the legislature is one of the least popular, you know, entities I can think of.
Well, you know, and the thing about that decision to me that was kind of interesting, a little wrinkle, was just that, you know, he looked at it and the things that were kind of gimmicks, right? He
right.
said, well, I can't judge that. That, you know, that they put it in there, but the numbers don't add up. And the legislature, you know, Democrats I was talking to was saying, well, look, this is the process. You know, we don't do everything, you know, A, B, and C, and D, and have it done, and it's in a nice package, and it's, you know, there on June 15th. And, you know, he's stepping in and saying, well, that might be how you did the process before, but that doesn't work anymore.
One of the best parts of the whole thing to me was that in addition to there's a fight over Prop 98, which we won't do now because Kevin and I had discussions with it with a staffer, and then I think we had a Twitter discussion, which only one person thought was interesting, and I thought just showed that we have no life.
Yeah, pretty much.
But part of Chung's ruling was that the trailer bills weren't sent down, the budget implementation bills. And so there is some kind of I said this earlier this week, and someone's going to tell me this is not actually accurate for it, and I'm to hell with it. I'm saying it anyway. But there's a bit of schadenfreude about it. I mean, that the Democratic majority in the Capitol didn't send the trailer bills for a strategic reason. You know, they didn't send them because they want to keep them. They may want to attach them to another budget. Those were hard deals to get, you know, redevelopment or some of the other cuts or some of the other the fees issues and things. And because they didn't send the trailer bills down, Chung said, you don't have all of the implementation of the budget bill. The numbers don't add up. No pay. I mean, there's some humorous element to that
to me.
Well,
and I think there's some irony, too, in that what did Prop 25 get the Democrats? Other than not having a paycheck at this point.
Yeah, you know? I was going to say, it's exactly what they got, the no paycheck.
Yeah, I think Wyatt's point was a good one. I mean, the controller didn't criticize their budget for a lot of the things that we were talking about last week. Sale leaseback.
Carefully not saying those things, it seems like to me.
The quarter cent sales tax by majority vote, the first five money that's tied up in legal action. And he said he felt like he didn't have the authority to rule on those. So in some ways, I mean, I've heard talk that the legislature would come back, satisfy Chung's concerns, but still keep some of those same items in there. But then you have a problem with the governor on them. So
well, you could do a paycheck drill, though, and he vetoes it, but you get paid.
Sure, you could.
That, again, won't make them any more popular, but
– yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and none of us really know how the pressure point plays out about the pay. I want to talk about that briefly. So the reaction to the pay, it's as though every Republican had gotten a memo that said, praise it, praise it, praise it, even though if it may yeah. hurt you personally. And so like every release was, you know, Republican legislators who do not like John Chung in the past. I mean, think of all the things that Republicans haven't liked Chung about. Think about the fights with Schwarzenegger over minimum wage for state workers, about the furloughs, about all the things that he was praised by the left. And, you know, now how the tables turn, every Republican praised John Chung for his work on this, and every Democrat was angry with him. To the point where some Democrats, Mike Gatto, Democratic Assemblyman from the LA area, you know, wrote a blistering press release that said, have to explain to my wife and daughter, no pay, which earned him, George Skelton in the Times said it properly. Gatto should have written that, got it, vented his frustration, and then torn up the piece of paper and thrown it in the trash. When he put it out as a press release, what he got was a bunch of scorn from people saying, oh, poor legislator. And you know, no disrespect to Mr. Gatto, but it did not play that way.
And it was one of the first press releases out. I think it might have been the first reaction I got. And it was
he became
quick after the
face of, you know, the public enemy number one after this decision with that statement. I mean, half of our letters page the next day was filled with letters about Mike Gatto John and Ken end up doing their radio show where they deliver a bag of groceries to his office.
Yeah.
I mean, he became the face of the legislature.
And it's, you know, and while, again, I think it's the Sacramento reaction versus the state reaction. You know, this is, you gotta watch what you say about the controller's decision, because it's got lots of populism out there behind it, and yet you disagree with it for all kinds of other reasons. But
and Senator Noreen Evans, you know, she's been a bit outspoken about this.
Democrat of Santa Rosa.
Yes, and even prior to this decision, but, you know, her comment that this precipitates a constitutional crisis, you know, seems maybe
overblown, I would say. A crisis is...
Crisis, yeah. But you know, there is a question here of you know, authority and, you know, sort of separation of powers that I think is going to have to be addressed by somebody, by a court at some point.
And Kevin and I were talking about this before you were getting your coffee, Wyatt, so see you missed this. But we were talking about this before we started recording, is that, you know, there hasn't been anything like this before of someone fact-checking effectively a budget. We've just kind of largely left it up to, as you said, Kevin, whether or not you could finance it, whether or not you could get borrowing that you needed out of it. And, of course, the sad reality,
you could get you could borrow at any cost.
Yeah,
Wall Street will lend you the money. They just you know, increase, just like they do for anybody else who wants to, almost anybody else who wants to borrow money. Yeah. They just do it at higher cost.
But I think, Wyatt, your point's right. I mean, this isn't going to go away. This now does open the door in some way, shape, or form to what happens in the future. And that's where a lot of Democrats were saying, what do you do then if you've got a, you know, a opposite party controller legislature, a punitive kind of, you know, on and on and on and on and on.
And the interesting thing, too, is that Prop 58 has been around since 2004, and we've seen some pretty nasty budgets with wild assumptions go through, and this has never happened. Nobody's stopped it and said, you know what, this isn't balanced. Try again.
And Chung and his staff have seemed to have tried very hard to say this is a limited thing. Do not read into it a precedent issue, though I think all of us think easier said than done. Maybe not legal precedent, but certainly there's going to be a lot more chest beating, you know, with future people in the office.
I think, that one reason that Chung limited himself to not making judgments on things like sale leaseback is, at least what he said afterward, was that he was aware of these legal challenges being a potential, and he knew that the separation of powers argument would come up, and that if he felt that if he had started making greater judgment calls rather than, you know, looking at the more strict technical issues, as it were, that he would perhaps be in a worse place legally. So he says he tried to limit his authority.
So does this help? Do you guys think? I mean, and this is a real question here at the end of the week. Does this help the governor's case at all with exerting pressure? I mean, you know, everybody is either, I don't know, either you play it straight or you play it smart alecky sometimes. And I think sometimes when I start writing blog stuff, it's a little more smart alecky than maybe my straight radio reporting. Such is life.
Two sides of John Myers.
Yeah, well, there are probably more than two sides, my wife would say, unfortunately. If I don't have the coffee, that's another problem. But yeah, does the governor's budget plan have a pulse at this point? I mean, you know, as Daryl Steinberg said to us yesterday, the president pro tem of the Senate, you know, I'll leave it to the governor to schedule the funeral, you know, and to declare this. But it doesn't feel as though it does. And yet the governor does seem intent on running his plan A, his tax extension and his bridge idea, notwithstanding Republican comments yesterday that there's no bridge, there's no conditional tax increase. He seems intent on running that all the way through next week to the end of the fiscal year before he comes up with a plan B. You know, we all got this kind of vibe from Democrats in the legislature when Brown met with them this week. What day was that now? Tuesday, Wednesday, I've lost track of the days. But we all got this vibe that, you know, Brown had said, I'm working on an alternate. And, you know, this is like the telephone game. Some Democrats came out and said, he's going to do it tomorrow. And he wasn't going to do it tomorrow. But there seems to be no benefit for him to come up with a plan B now until July 1st.
Well, Steinberg because
exert the pressure, I was going to say, with the paychecks and play it out to the end.
Well, and I don't know how long, you know, 15 days without being paid, if that's enough to really exert that much pressure. I guess we'll see. But, you know, Steinberg, you know, in his comments yesterday, there's not too many ways to read, you know, what he said. You know, he said he didn't think it was going to happen, declared the patient dead, basically, but letting the governor do the formal, you know, honors. And there is a lot of talk about, you know, June 30th, July 1st. I wonder, you know, if the governor, if that is the point for him. Maybe he'll take it longer. I mean, he's full of surprises.
Yeah. And I mean, once he gets past July 1st, we've kind of all said this, once he gets past July 1st, the incentive changes. I mean, if the tax issue becomes so dramatically different, and a lot of people have already said it's technically dead anyway. We all got this sense from the State Board of Equalization that there's no way to change the sales tax rate so fast now, you know, that the horse has left the barn or whatever the right euphemism is. But, If the governor has to abandon his tax package out of political reality, then right. What's the incentive then, other than to exert maximum pressure on the legislature? And now you have pressure in the $400 a day category that is different than we've ever had.
I think that the leaders are hearing from some of their members. I mean, I think there are degrees.
Is that why we're getting this vibe about leadership grumbles in multiple caucuses now, apparently? Or not? Anyway.
That, it could be.
Yeah.
I mean, people start to get very nervous and anxious when their pay gets cut off. And I mean, there are some people for whom this will not be a problem. And then there are some people who live paycheck to paycheck, from what I understand. I mean,
yeah.
And so.
Well, and last year it went till October. So. You know,
but what's fascinating here is that, I mean, it's like these two immovable objects, it seems like, in a way. You've got Republicans lined up, and they're Republican immovable objects, really. You've got Republicans lined up against taxes on one obvious side. You also have Republicans lined up saying we're not going to cut education beyond a certain level. This gets back to our lovely mind-numbing Twitter discussion. And there's some wiggle room in the education formula of Prop 98, but there ain't enough wiggle room to get you the full resolution of the $10 billion problem without suspending Proposition 98, which Republicans insist they will not do, which kind of puts you at a, well, then what? I mean, like, we've all gone through the numbers. You can't cut Medi-Cal, but so much more anymore because of federal mandates. You can cut prisons, but I mean, you're not, you know, letting people out is not what they're, I mean, you know, there's a, where do you go? Where do you go to get the remaining solution? That's what I find most fascinating.
I think that's what the governor is struggling with a little bit right now. I mean, how he's been saying, or at least hinting at, look, if we don't get these taxes, we're going to cut deeply in education and public safety. Well, how do you cut deeply in education if you can't convince 2/3 of the legislature to suspend Proposition 98, the guarantee for school funding? So, I mean,
could he blue pencil education funding lower than the 98 guarantee?
No, I mean,
you're the budget expert here.
He could do some things. He could veto some revenue sources that would, I think, bring 98 down on the natural, but not to the level he's talking about. I mean, in the billions of dollars. I mean, the things that he could do. I mean, I did ask this question about a week ago of people who worked in finance and around budgets, and they said, well, there are areas like where the Democrats looked at, like higher ed and courts, where he could blue pencil. He could zero out the university budgets, but I don't see him doing that.
Yeah. And I mean, we've never tested that blue pencil power to that extent. I mean, and again, it kind of goes back to the way budgets are written. Budgets have never been written under this culture that we're now sitting in this year about the pressures of the Constitution and the pressures of these things that were kind of fine-tuning measures before, but now we're in a much different place. I mean, so, you know, in kind of wrapping this conversation up, I really don't know what I would tell people is the guidepost of what to watch. Though I can't say with any certainty that there won't be anything this week. But I don't see any sign that this is the let's yell at everybody before we have a breakthrough. I mean, this is a multi-headed beast.
No,
my prediction, we do this, I don't know if we're at the end, if it's and if you do that at the end.
We don't have any rules, Wyatt, okay. as the audience unfortunately has found out through time. Yes.
Perfect. I think something happens this week. If there's a breakthrough, I think the odds on that are slimmer, but I think Democrats push something through.
Some kind of action.
Yeah. something majority vote before what, Thursday. So
even without a Brown sign off, in which case you could push a second veto. Let's make history again. A second gubernatorial veto.
With that, you know, why not? You know, and I know that Ana Mata Santos, his budget director, was meeting with him on Wednesday, I believe, for, you know, most of the day. So, you know, I'm sure they're talking about, okay, what else?
What's the plan B?
Yeah.
Yeah.
From what I heard from Democratic members, there is a desire and an intent to get something on the floor by the 30th. So, the governor did indicate to some degree that he was going to provide them some new ideas. So, you know, they're still, from what I heard yesterday, they're still waiting. But they will. They'll go forward with a new package with or without the governor, I think.
Especially at this point. I mean, given that they've already made that break somewhat, it's not so – once you've already done that, once you've already kind of said we're not completely on the same page, what's the harm in continue to do
it? They had their first fight, yeah.
I mean, their view is basically we're doing everything we can do. We did the cuts in March. You know, maybe it wasn't the best budget they put together on the 15th, but, you know, they don't think that they can do much more without taxes and without suspending 98.
You think there's a chance of conditional cuts somehow, some kind of language
that gets
you? Yeah, I have too. Some kind of language that says, you know, we'll do X, but if revenues come back, we won't do X. Or, you know, it's like the inverse of the trigger idea. You know, it's not like triggering cuts, but triggering off cuts or something. I mean, I guess that's possible, as we've all kind of heard. So
well, and they did that with the courts, and I think the UC and CSU as well, in the budget that they passed that was vetoed. They, you know, there was a stipulation that director of the Department of Finance could trigger off those cuts if more revenues came in.
So more budget writing escapades to come, no doubt. Well, let's leave it there. Wyatt, this has been your tune-up for television tonight. Wyatt's going to be on our KQED TV show this week in Northern California. There's a plug for you, Wyatt. So I've given you a little tune-up in the podcast here.
7:30?
I think so, on Friday. Yes, indeed, tonight. So it's Wyatt Buchanan from San Francisco Chronicle, Kevin Yamamura. Good to come down from the high floors in the building here
from
the Sacramento
Bee.
Yeah, exactly. We're in the same building across from the Capitol. I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.